parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
Yes, as you can hear, it is the parenting slot on Joanna Fortune, clinical psychotherapist specialising in child and adult psychotherapy. Joins me now to go through some of the questions you sent in for the parenting slot. As ever, though, do text or email your questions to afternoon@newstalk.ie or text 53106. And if we don't get to them today, we'll cover them over the next week. Joanna, good to see you.
Good to see you, Tom, yeah.
Valentine's Day stroke Ash Wednesday. It's a strange combination.
It's a very strange combination. Yeah. I did get a rather hilarious text from my mother this morning, starting with Happy Valentine's Day and adding in PS, it's Ash Wednesday, no meat.
No meat, well, no chocolate is another thing which can be...
Oh, I never heard that.
Yeah, well, I've shut that unwanted information out. Yes, no chocolate. When exactly does it start? Yeah, it's surely tomorrow.
Tomorrow, definitely. Still
start
recovering
tomorrow
from the pancakes.
Yes. Right, this is quite a longish one and a heavy enough one to start you off with, Joanna. So here we go. We are a family of four living in Dublin. We have two boys who just turned 9 and 5. My husband and I moved from Northern Ireland to Dublin for career reasons 14 years ago. And career-wise, Dublin has been great. However, in that time, we also had our children and no family support. We really struggled at times trying to rear a family with no family or friend support. Along the journey over the last 14 years, my husband suffered with his mental health, becoming a father, the pressures of his job, etc. He attended psychotherapy and is now doing great. Last year, our 9-year-old son, who was 8 at the time, started showing signs of anxiety as well, and we worked hard with him on this, working closely with his teacher. He eventually told us he was anxious about me dying and not being there. We think this stemmed directly from the death of a grandparent and the family pet shortly afterwards. He's doing great again, but he is a sensitive child and a deep thinker and yet very social, but we keep an eye on him. Recently, my husband has been offered the chance to return to Northern Ireland with his work. This will be a permanent move for the family. We feel the move will be great for the family, in particular having our support network of family and friends closer to us. However, we are extremely worried the move will be detrimental to our 9-year-old son. We are not too worried about the 5-year-old, as he doesn't have a network of friends or community as such. The thoughts of this upheaval on him fills me with dread. Yes, he is familiar with the area, but he will be starting in a new school in a totally different curriculum away from the friends he knows. We have a choice and I'm afraid to make one that will cause him to have more anxieties. Any advice, please?
Oh, it's a long, detailed one. Yes, I mean, first of all, I think this family are clearly very responsive. You know, dad had some difficulties with mental health and psychotherapy was part of that. And then the little boy had some emotional struggles and they responded very quickly and promptly to that. So I'm hearing this is a family who see a problem, seek a solution, and seek to make things better. I think that bodes well, because any potential move will involve planning and very careful consideration of everyone involved that we can already see. My first response is going to be that the adults make this decision. This is not a decision for a child to make or even to be involved in making. It's absolutely too much control, too much power, and way beyond their developmental scope. And when you get to the second part of this letter and you see it would be a permanent move, we think it would be great for the family, we'd have our support network, there's a lot of positives there. And you can feel that the person who wrote this, they know this is something that would be good for them and their family. I'm going to say go with your gut on this, go with your instinct. If this is a permanent move closer to family and friends and that's a priority, then that's what you're doing. You're moving. And once you have made that decision, now you bring the children with you in the process. So it's happening with them rather than to them. And I think that can take the guise of anything. It's sitting them down and giving them plenty of notice. It's driving them to the area that the new house will be in, making sure they see the house, making sure they see where the new school will be as often as you can, giving you friends and family up there. I think you make a visual board. You know, you can start and do something quite creative by having a photo of where you currently live and making a visual map that maps you all moving as the days and weeks go by, little pictures of everyone moving a step further and step closer to the new home, so that he really sees, okay, it's happening, it's going to be happening in a few more weeks, a few more days, but that's so abstract. A visual board where he can physically un-blue tack and re-blue tack pictures of all of them. from one house to another is something that can be very helpful. I think give him a box that is his own to pack, that can be a shoebox or something a little bit bigger, and don't get involved in what he packs in that. That's entirely up to him. His important special items go in there. It's marked with his name. He packs it, he unpacks it. So he's very much an active part of this process. I think he's still very young. He will adapt. It doesn't mean it will be easy, and I don't mean to infer it will, but I think he is still young. The going back to when he did have struggles, and the inference that the parents are making is that his fear of one parent dying was tied to the actual loss of a grandparent and the family pet, which is terrible for children. You know, that's a lot of loss to deal with. But it may be a clue that loss is a trigger for his anxiety. So what's really important is picking up on the writer's sense of dread. I'm dreading doing this because I'm anticipating he's going to struggle. What I mean, they take their lead from us, our children. So you want to be super positive about this move and really buy into it, that this is going to be great for everyone, including him. And he's going to take his emotional lead from you. So if you anticipate, as you are, that loss is a trigger, it's important he doesn't experience this relocation as a loss. That means it has to be spoken about positively, it has to be planned carefully, and he has to be actively involved. But it is possible.
Okay. It's funny, as you say that, it strikes me that it's not a loss at all if they're moving into
with
a support network.
And that's
which he
so
hasn't
important.
Had at all.
And I think for parents as well, that I mean, you just kind of go, oh my gosh, you know, you're living in Dublin for 14 years, you've had your family here with no support. And now that they're at an age that they are, support, access to cousins, friends, that's all really important. He is familiar with the area they're moving to, so it's not completely unknown.
I would argue it's going to be better for him, just the support, people.
It's a little bit of just do it, but the adults must make the decision.
Yeah. When your family group becomes bigger and there are more people for you to identify with and become friends with and learn,
it feels safer. It feels more structured.
Absolutely, yeah. Fewer texts coming in. I went through this about 5 years ago. Make sure to have familiar things around the kids when you move. Have their friends from their old home visit regularly.
As much as possible, given it's Northern Ireland and Dublin. But yeah, I think a little adventure, a road trip would be lovely.
These things make it easier. Just do it. This is not a new thing. How many kids go through this and they are fine? Stop being overly protective. I was thinking that this does happen. People lose their jobs and have to move.
They do, but I think this parent knows their child and is identifying that this is a particularly sensitive child who's already had an experience of anxiety. So I don't know that it's overprotective. I think it's cautious, and I can understand that.
Use Google Maps Street View is
That's
great.
That's a really good idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Go
Bottom
for
line.
It, but it has to be an adult decision. This should never be something a child feels they're making a call on behalf of the family.
Okay. Second one for you is this. I think my 14-year-old daughter has started smoking. I smelled smoke on her clothes the other day. When I tried to talk to her about it, she became very defensive and told me that it was just one of her friends who was smoking and not her. She's been eating a hell of a lot of chewing gum lately and spraying a lot more body spray too. These are telltale signs. I don't want her to feel like I don't believe her, but on the other hand, I want her to know how serious this is and that if she is smoking, she needs to stop before it becomes a habit. How do I broach this with her again? And what do I do if she still won't admit to it? It sounds like you would need to be Inspector Clouseau to work out what's going on.
I know.
On here.
Well, the only thing is, yes, I mean, on the balance of probability, you're probably right, but you don't know that for absolute sure. So I would be advising, don't get into that place of I know what's going on, but stay in a place of seeking to know. I'm definitely curious as to what's going on here. So I wouldn't challenge her head on, but she has said to you, look, my friend is smoking and there's your in at 1 degree removed. So I would say, look, you know, I've been thinking about your friend smoking and the fact that you're around her, and I would bombard her with disgusting images and factual data about passive smoking. Never mind actual smoking, and flag what could be happening to her friend, but what's happening to her by simply being around the friend. I think that's way of to get it going. The fact that she's chewing gum and spraying body spray may well point towards this, but it may also point to the fact that she's a 14-year-old girl. And that's not unusual. So correlation and causation.
I'd be straight in there, 2 and 2 equals smoking.
I think a lot of people
now,
would, but you know what's going to happen is what you've already had an insight here is that she'll get defensive and she'll shut down.
Okay.
And it will mean that she's not even open to having this discussion with
all
you.
Right.
That's the bit.
Let's not throw that away.
I just think that instinctively, of course, a parent's first reaction is anger to something like that. That's totally normal. But then we have to kind of take a moment and recall what peer pressure, what that kind of demand on you when you were that age yourself, what was that like and how did you handle it? I mean, definitely people her age, young people her age are very curious, but they're also very excited about breaking rules and defying social norms and trying out new things and experimenting. And what you hope is that this is a phase of more negative risk-taking behaviour. So get in there and have a talk. Emphasise that smoking gives you smelly breath, yellow teeth, yellow nails. Really go in with the vanity, the vanity side of things. And if it really escalates or if she shuts you out and you're still suspicious, you could put a new rule in. She's 14, that actually you don't like the smell of smoke and you don't want to be around it. So she must be responsible for washing her own smoky clothes. So if you smell smoke on her clothes, you don't wash them. She must do that. They sit there for her. Also, if there's any sports going on, try and invest in that because smoking and sports are a no-no.
Yep.
And try and invest in some more positive risk-taking behaviour like sports if you can.
Okay. Make her smoke a cigarette in front of you. And while she's smoking, show her pictures of what it can do to you. Nip it quickly, says
the listener. That works if you know that they're definitely smoking, but this parent is not in a certainty place.
Still just suspicion. 14 isn't unusual for this behaviour, is it? It seems so young. When do kids stop being kids? There's a great question.
That is a great question. It's very subjective. I mean, some of them stop being kids when they're four and others are, you know, still calling mum and dad at 40 years old for everything. So it really does depend. What you do find at this age, though, at 14, is that it's almost a second bite at the developmental apple because your 3 and 4 year old do a lot of defiant, independent seeking, I'm in charge of me, I'm the boss of me type behaviours. So does your 13 and 14 year old. So it is a developmental opportunity to get it right a second time if it didn't go great the first time.
Yeah.
But what you do find is parentally, you're going to be needed as an active parent. You're going to do lots of active parenting in early to mid adolescence, just as you did in early to mid childhood. So it is, in one way, the childish needs are there, but the adolescent defiance and demand is also there. So it's a difficult one.
You're not the boss of me is a phrase that I haven't heard in a few years now. I used to hear it quite a lot a few years ago. They've gone past that. So that'll come back.
That will definitely come back. And the response is always, I'm not the boss of you or what you do, but I am the boss of what happens when you do it. So it's up to them
I'll
what they do,
that
but
out
you're in
it
charge
of
the consequences.
We're going to have a quick break, but Joanna's staying with us. So if you have more questions, 53106 is the text number. You're very welcome back. It's the Moncrief Show. Tom Dunn sitting in with Sean today. And Joanna Fortune is with us answering your parenting questions. And here is another one for you now. My gorgeous little boy has just turned 3. He has significant sensory processing issues and language delay, both expressive and receptive. He is delicious, but has his struggles. I'm finding it very difficult to explain to him when his behaviour is out of line. Even minor things, stuff like little tantrums and grabbing stuff because of his language difficulties. Can you please help?
Yeah, I mean, look, disciplining an under 4-year-old is, you know, a nightmare anyway because they don't do cause and effect. But add into the mix that he has these developmental challenges as
what
well.
What are they exactly? I didn't really understand
so
that.
So sensory processing issues. I mean, she's saying issues, not disorder. So, I mean, it could be anything. It could be that he's prone to getting very quickly overstimulated and over-aroused, like bright lights, noises, temperature, heightened sensitivity to things like that. And she probably, or this parent is probably finding that they have to assess environments and situations very quickly to make sure that his arousal level stays at a more optimum level because that's going to be something. But add into that the language delay that's both expressive and receptive. So that's understanding and communicating back. So I'm going to say very, very briefly that on this one that distraction is your friend, not discipline. So you want to employ distraction techniques that now they don't have to be confused with rewards. They don't have to be fun distractions, but redirecting him as quickly as you possibly can. You can say no, holding his hand, making sure he sees your eyes, and they'll know by your face, even if language receptive work is difficult, that you mean business. No, you can adopt a freeze, everybody freeze like a statue. What's happening in our bodies? What do we need to do to feel better? Let's do that. You could adopt that kind of an approach, which will slow down the arousal for him. And think about what we call proprioceptive input, which is deep pressure, touch-based input. And how I'm going to best describe that to you is as tug of war.
Okay.
Have him sit opposite you with his back supported, get a scarf between you and pull, pull, pull really hard. And if you pull him over on top of you, he gets a big squidgy tight hug. And if you fall over on top of him, there's a big squidgy hug. But there's lots of deep pressure input with that. Or make a pillow sandwich that you have him lie on his tummy. You put a cushion on his back. You gently, obviously, lie yourself on that cushion and then you put that pressure in on him
that
again.
That sounds relatively complicated to me. Is that something that you can learn yourself or you need to
get help
with?
No, I would suggest some help. And I imagine if there's a diagnosis of sensory processing issues as well as language delay, they're already involved in services. But if not, that would be a really good idea. At 3 years old, the early intervention team is a service that's available. Go through your local HSE. But occupational therapy would be really good. When you want to mix in some behavioural input as well, try to seek an occupational therapist who's trained in what we call sensory attachment integration, which is a particular type of occupational therapy that can be very effective with children who have multiple issues as well as sensory, especially around that emotional regulation piece.
Okay, great. This next one is quite a heavy one and very serious as well. So here we go. My issue stems from my husband's temper around our 5-month-old son. My husband has had 2 major outbursts since our son has been born. Both have been directed at me and both times have been in front of our son. He uses horrific language and he takes his frustration out of me verbally. He also shouts around the house when he's angry and one time said to my son in anger, "Your mother is an effing C." I have rang Women's Aid for legal advice. And if it continues, I plan to take action. I find it also hurtful, humiliating and demoralising. My husband apologises each time and blames his growing up as a child when he was bullied and has promised to seek counselling. Can you please advise how I can protect my son in all of this? I'm worried this level of aggression will negatively impact our son. I know he loves our son and is not setting out to hurt him, but I don't think he appreciates the effect his behaviour will have on him.
Yeah, wow, it's a really very serious one. So I'm going to be really honest about the impact or potential impact on the baby. And I say that, you know, I'm flagging that because I don't want this woman to feel even more stressed as a result of this. But it would be disingenuous to say, oh, no, everything will be fine. I mean, the age he's at now, he's 5 months old. He's just coming out of that co-development stage of development. So that means where babies don't yet know they're separate beings to their mothers, they still very much think they're one and the same. So at this at that stage, what impacts on mum very much impacts
so
on baby.
So an attack on the mum is literally like an attack on
him. It really
him.
Is. It
that's
really
how
is.
It feels to him.
And that's exactly it.
Oh, wow.
Because when he's looking at her and getting a sense of himself, a sense of self through her. So when she looks at him with love, he's seeing, well, I'm lovable. But if mum is upset, frightened, scared, he's also soaking up all of that. So a child's environment and early exposures, I mean, they really do impact on their health and well-being. However, and I don't want to sound all doom and gloom because, however, repair and recovery is possible. A joint parent-child type of therapy or a brief process with a therapist who's skilled in this area could normalize those heightened cortisol levels caused by the stressful environment. That can get the body's stress response back to normal and children can go on, grow and develop with no other impact on their development. They really can do very, very well. It comes back to...
So the child can put it behind him.
Absolutely.
With help very easily.
With absolutely. And particularly, okay, he's 5 months old. I mean, so young, so malleable. Everything that goes into them under the age of 3, good, bad or indifferent, is setting a foundation stone for their coping and resilience as they grow. So there's great hope here.
Okay.
There really is. Like, it is all possible to turn this around. I think picking up on, I love that she has rang Women's Aid because that's really sensible and proactive and has gotten legal advice. The if it continues, I plan to take action. So that's quite subjective. I don't know what you mean by if it continues. How many more times have you got something in mind? If so, have you a plan? Have you an exit strategy? You need one that's going to keep you and your son safe. I think the husband promising to seek counselling, it doesn't say he has done so.
He kind of has to do that, doesn't he?
He really has to do that.
Initially, when I saw husband's temper, I did think children and the stress of having
children. Oh, it's children very stressful,
can drive
and particularly
all of us.
In infancy.
Yeah.
But the role of the other parent during that codependent stage is so important because for a mum to be that available to her baby, she needs to be supported by her partner. So it actually involves everybody. So while it is very stressful, it's also very important. I would say yes, individual therapy for him. And possibly if they decide to give this a go and stick together, couples counselling would be an idea. But yes, it potentially can impact on a child that young. But there is hope, because repair and recovery from appropriate input is absolutely possible.
Right. So a little bit of this, or a lot of it actually, is explaining to her husband and saying that this has to stop.
It has to stop. It's not a, it's because I was bullied as a child. That might explain it, but it does not excuse it. And explaining and excusing are different things. So if he has that level of insight that he can say it's because of this, that's great. But take that insight to therapy and process it and work on it so that your partner and son are safe and happy in your home.
And then explain to him that it has to stop, and if it doesn't, this is what's going to happen.
And have a timeline on that. Yeah. You know, if it doesn't, when. So I would also say in addition to linking in with Women's Aid, which is something she can keep doing, their helpline is really, really a supportive one and available, try and access a broader support network in her own family and friends as well. Make sure that this isn't a secret. Make sure people are aware and that she has support.
Okay. Text is saying she just needs to get the baby out of the situation. If he was going to get therapy, he would have already. She needs to take control. I think that's more or less kind of what you're saying, really, isn't it? Right. So another one for you now, a little bit similar to the baby who's just turned 3. My 2.5-year-old son is not yet talking. He has maybe 4 words. He's an only child, so it's down to my husband and I to help him along. We read a lot to him, always talk to him and vocalise everything, but he's just not reciprocating. There are no development issues that we know of. His hearing is not an issue. Should I be worried?
I think you're already worried.
One of the great questions,
isn't it? Because when someone asks me that, I'm like, well, you're already worried. Yes. And you took the time to write this, so you're worried, and it's okay to be worried. I'm not going to say you have any more need to be, but that's okay. I just want to validate that. As well as that, like you're saying, there's no development issues and his hearing is not an issue. For me, that would infer that you've consulted with a doctor or a professional on those areas, which is great. I would say at 2.5, he's still very young. But yes, having only 4 words does sound delayed. So one of your options is that you get yourself referred to the early intervention team for a global assessment. They will look at speech and language as well as everything else in his development. And if the waiting list is long, and it is, I shouldn't say if, because I know the waiting list for the early intervention team are very long. They're long. It depends. They differ. I don't know where this person's from.
Will the boys still be in short trousers?
Well, I'd hope so, but it's when it's something like speech, you don't want to wait.
No.
But sometimes you've no choice. So if you have a choice, you could consult with a speech and language therapist who could give you some exercises that you could proactively be doing now. Typically, professionals aren't really super worried about speech until after the age of 3, because children develop at different rates. Because, you know, you might look up online, what should my 2-year-old be doing? And like 10 2-year-olds are going to be doing different things.
Different.
And that's okay. But I would say early intervention team and consult with a speech and language therapist as soon as you can, if possible.
Right. Next one for you now. My nearly 2-year-old daughter has stopped eating her dinner and has a huge freak out when we try to feed her dinner. This has been going on for 3 weeks. She, of course, still eats snacks that are all bad for her. Please help.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say this is so common in so many families, because actually most 2-year-olds are asserting their independence and desire for control. And what's the one thing we can all control, at least mostly, what goes in and out of our mouths? Yeah. So first of all, as soon as she is seeing that it's having this effect on you, she's winning. One of the things you've got to do is don't worry too much about what she's eating day to day, but consider what is she eating over the week. Lots of small children would eat really well one day and pick like a little bird the next day for no apparent reason. But if over the week they're eating mostly fine most of the time, if her weight is not dropping, I would say she's doing okay. There are a couple of things you could do, is very much limit the snacks. Pull the snacks way back, particularly if she is not eating meals but is eating snacks. I would cut the snacks back even further and let her get hungry for her meals. Be very aware, and often as parents we overlook how much fluids our children are intaking. If she is filling up on juice and milk, that will fill her up. So offer her choices, because I do think she's looking for control, but make sure they're healthy choices. She can choose between A, B and C, but you're happy if she eats any of those.
Okay.
So make sure she has that control, but it's within healthy choices. Eat as a family. She doesn't have to finish what's in front of her, but she does have to stay seated at the table while everyone else is eating, because the chances are she'll pick.
All those beautiful rules. They're great. Set the table.
Guidelines.
Yeah. We have them, I think, most families
and
do.
I just think it's one way of trying to take the control back with the
table
food
is
issue.
This area where this parent, it's the coalface of parenting, really.
Oh, huge. Yeah. And if you can get, but the big thing is that you don't get into a battle with her about eating. Say, it's okay, if you don't want to eat, don't eat, just leave it there, but we'll all finish together. And the chances are when you're not paying attention, she'll start picking at other bits and pieces again. But look at her eating over a week. Given it's only 3 weeks, make sure she's not teething. Make sure she's not running a temperature coming down with something, because that would affect appetite as well.
Okay. I think we're beaten by the clock. We could ask you 1,000 more questions.
That's okay.
So if you have more, get them into us. 53106, you can text them to or email afternoon@newstalk.com. Joanna, thank you very much as
My
always.
Pleasure.
You can listen back to the parenting podcast on newstalk.com. After the break, how to fix a broken heart.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. Five Rivers Fostering.ie.